Chapter 35. Sweet Bread.
"I have placed many protections upon the wagon," Ethrys explained, proudly pointing out the details of his work. Jen examined the runes, etched silver and black, into the dark wood, wondering at the purpose of each. The Shalane, Jaren, Mirel, and Cadaen stood nearby, as Ethrys lectured on about how the wagon could withstand crushing, burning, and magical attacks of several varieties. Despite the impressive charms laid upon it, it was simply built, a dark wooden box on wheels. The craftsman, acting on very specific designs from Regent Ogbith and Ethrys, used oak wood the thickness of a hand and studded with iron bands to construct what most nearly resembled a prison wagon. Barred, narrow slits, one on each of the four sides, provided the only ventilation and light. It had been constructed in a large outbuilding used for storage. Servants had worked through the early winter to clear and clean the large room, and the craftsmen had started their work as the snow fell deep. Today, servants of all varieties bustled about, loading wagons or preparing the four powerful black horses that would pull the heavy monstrosity. The dust kicked up by their stirring converted the diffuse morning sunlight into well-defined, slanted shafts from high windows to the floor. Summer approached, and the time to undertake the long journey to Eldoluri Mora had come. "Now," Ethrys continued, as happy and enthusiastic as Jen had ever seen him, "what you may not realize is that the lock upon the door is only visible to those that have the brand. All others will be blind to it. Quite the feat, really. I will give one key to Jen and the other to Jaren, who will have sole charge over entry to and exit from the wagon while on their watches. Even if they were to be killed, however, the enemy would see nothing to place the key in." "What if both Jaren and I are slain and dragged off with our keys?" Jen asked. "Is there any way to open the wagon in that circumstance?"
"I can open it with magic," Ethrys replied.
"And what if you're dead too?" Jaren asked, before Jen could. Ethrys stroked his chin, face perplexed.
"Let us hope it does not come to that,"
Mirel filled in during Ethrys's contemplation.
"If you three are dead, it will likely be better the Shalane not get out."
"Let's get the Shalane's things in the wagon and get the horses hitched. We leave in an hour. The parade will slow us down, and we are already late."
Mirel left, Cadaen and a still pensive Ethrys mumbling to himself, trailing behind. Normally, Jen would use the morning to sleep, but the First Mother had asked him to sit atop the Shalane's wagon during their crawl through Mikmir so the people could see him. Jen didn't want to do it, but he acquiesced at Mirel's insistence.
"I wonder what could be keeping Fenna," the Shalane thought aloud. "She was supposed to meet us here for Ethrys's exposition about the wagon. Do you know where she is, Jen?"
"Yes, Holiness," Jen replied. "The First Mother asked her to ensure that the bard Jeff was taken care of. He arrived from Tenswater last night."
"Why did Fenna get chosen for that particular duty?" the Shalane asked.
"As she made me understand it," Jen continued, "the bard requested her specifically. He wanted to talk with someone close to the Shalane and somehow knew of her. What his purpose could be, I do not know."
The Shalane nodded.
"Jeff has played here several times. Quite good. He is familiar with the members of the Rokgothian court, and all others, I suspect. No doubt he remembered Fenna was my handmaiden."
Their conversation was interrupted by a skinny, tall young man looking firmly and determinedly at the floor. He held a small chest in his arms.
Holiness, I have the first of your things. I was told to put them inside the chest in the wagon if you... Well, of course not you, of course, but someone could let me in."
The Shalane smiled and tilted his head up with her hand.
"What is your name?"
Well, my name is Rolf, Your Grace," he managed after a shocked silence and a great deal of blushing.
"I thank you for carrying that down. Jen is not on duty and will open the wagon for you. I would like to get a look inside myself."
Jen unlocked the door quickly, hoping to spare Rolf as much discomfort as he could. The inside of the carriage did little to recommend itself to any occupant. A chest sat on the floor at the far end of the dark interior, and nothing of art or craft had been worked into the design to cheer a potential rider. Rolf clambered inside and started transferring the contents of the smaller chest into the larger one. The Shalane stared inside for a moment, hands on her hips.
"Help me up, Jen. I want to get a look at my new accommodations."
Jen proffered her a hand, but the wagon was tall enough that he had to practically lift her into it. She inspected the inside, knocking on the wood and staring out the barred slits in the walls.
"Leave it to Regent Ogbith to design a wagon. Am I being protected or punished? I don't think I'd even have enough light to read at full noon. I won't even mention how hot it will get in here."
Despite her complaints, Jen could sense her excitement at finally undertaking a journey that would lead her outside the confines of the castle. Her mood had gradually improved since the end of winter, and he thought it due to her anticipation of the road and adventure.
"And where were my protectors when this was crafted? Surely this is something I need protection from. By the time I get to Elder Lurimora, I shall probably be little more than cured meat. If they put any salt in here, I shall be sure of it."
"We regret our negligence, Highness," Jaren apologized. "We should have inspected the wagon sooner." The Shalane turned back toward them.
"I was only kidding, Jaren, though if you could cut a few more windows into this without Ethris noticing, I would be grateful."
"I'm afraid Ethris will notice every scratch, Holiness," Jen said. "I'm sure in the event of an attack, he will check to make sure you are safe very soon after checking the wagon." Jaren cracked a rare smile and the Shalane laughed. She ran a finger along one of the runes on the doorframe.
"I hope I am worthy of a wagon that can resist hail, lightning and battering rams while never becoming soiled."
"It is with the wagon as it is with all other things," Jen joked. "Of all that is good about the wagon, you are worthy. Of all that is bad, you are most undeservedly afflicted." The Shalane was about to say something when Rolf cleared his throat to indicate he was ready to get out of the wagon. The Shalane turned to see where he was, and as she did, her foot slipped from the edge and she fell. Jen caught her before she hit the ground, spinning to keep his balance and to redirect the momentum.
"Are you all right?" Jen asked. "Of course. Unhand me, knave," the Shalane teased, and set her feet on the ground.
For several minutes, they were subjected to every variation of apology Rolf had at his disposal, some bordering on actual eloquence. Despite the Shalane explaining that he was guiltless, he would not relent or leave until she explicitly forgave him twice. The rest of the loading, consisting mostly of clothes, cushions, and blankets, took little time as the Shalane only wished to bring but few of her possessions. Pureman Obard arrived with a small stack of books for her and bid her farewell. Fenner came soon after, the bard, Jeff, at her side. Jeff was much younger than Jen expected, in appearance not even 30. Large hazel eyes sparkled on a lightly tanned face framed by shoulder-length hair the colour of straw. The corners of his mouth seemed permanently pegged upward, and so cheery was his demeanour that he practically bounced at every step. As he talked with Fenner, his gestures were as broad as they were lively. His clothes evidenced his success at his craft. A fine green coat with golden buttons and yellow hose, accented by a green cap complete with a feather of some exotic bird. He and Fenner had just shared some joke together, and they were laughing as they entered. Jen felt a stab of jealousy. Both genuflected before the Shalane.
"Shalane," Fenner introduced, "I believe you are familiar with Jeff of Tolnor, Master Bard?" "I am. Welcome. We are glad to have your considerable talents with us on this journey. I am sure you will make the long miles more enjoyable."
Jeff bowed again, flourishing his yellow cape and bending to the point where his elbow nearly touched the top of highly polished black shoes with pointed tips curling upward.
"It is my honour to entertain and chronicle this historic event. I couldn't have been less deserving or more blessed to garner such a position. That the rest of the world will see the event through my eyes is a weighty responsibility, but I am so overcome with gratitude that I feel it not. I assure you that I will strive to be accurate and not exaggerate. I hope you will not mind if I ask you some questions from time to time."
"Certainly not, Master Bard," the Shalane replied.
"Excellent. And you must be Lord Blackshear, correct? Hard to miss a face like that."
"I am.
I have so many questions to ask you, I hardly know where to begin," Jeff said. "Winning the trials? Slaying Cormyth? Battling the demon? I feel a song coming on every time I think of it. And besides all that, the Lady Fairdale informs me that you were but a winter away from starting your life as a journeyman bard. From songs to swords. What a story that must be. I insist that you sing with me sometime. Fenner says you have a delightful voice.
Lady Fairdale is too kind, Jen said. I would certainly be a frog in the swan's pond singing next to you, if your reputation is of any substance.
You are too modest, I'm sure. Have you heard him sing, Shalane?
I have not, though I would like to.
That settles it then, for you cannot ignore the wish of the lady, Geoff concluded. We shall have a song from you before this journey's over. Well, the lovely Lady Fairdale is to show me what my accommodations are, Shalane, before she returns to your service. I could hardly be blessed with fairer company or a finer day to be in it. Are those plans acceptable to you, Holiness?
That will be fine, the Shalane agreed. We should leave soon, however, so do not be overlong. I would have Fenner with me, so I may have some company in my cage.
Excellent, Geoff said. I look forward to speaking to you again. Shalane, Lord Blackshear, Jaren.
He bowed and extended an arm to escort Fenner.
Before they had taken four steps, Geoff had Fenner laughing again.
No offence to either of you, the Shalane stated matter-of-factly, but that is a handsome man.
The swinging open of the large wooden doors of the building filled the silence that fell after the Shalane's comment. Mirel, side-saddle on a beautiful black horse, led a riderless horse of the same colour. Cadean gripped the reins of the animal, leading it toward Jen.
"Did you see Geoff, my daughter?" Mirel asked. "Gorgeous man, quite the talker."
"I had just commented the same to Jaren and Jen."
"So how did you two find the bard?"
Mirel asked Jaren and Jen as she dismounted.
Jen glanced at Jaren.
"He had bright clothes," Jaren said flatly.
"I agree wholeheartedly," Jen concurred.
The First Mother glanced from one to the other, expecting further comment.
"I see," she said. "A little jealous, perhaps?"
"Not at all," Jen answered quickly. "We only fear that with men about such as Dacen, Kimdan, and now Geoff, only the scraps of womanhood will be left to squander their love upon us, especially as we are afflicted with a persistent case of ugly."
"What say you, Jaren?"
"Speak for yourself, lad," Jaren said. "I've won the heart of a barmaid at the Quick Blade. You know, the sickly widow with three children and crooked teeth."
"Oh, right," Jen replied. "Does she have a sister?"
Mirel and the Shalane laughed, Cadean grinning behind.
"Well, Lord Blackshear,"
the First Mother said, coming close and throwing Jen a sultry look,
"if the barmaid's sister doesn't work out to your satisfaction, you always have me."
Jen swallowed hard and forced himself to smile in return.
"Mother!"
"Merely teasing, Shalane. Jen, I have changed my mind. I wish you to ride beside me behind the wagon. Crescent is a gentle horse, and you should find him to your liking."
"May I ask why?" Jen asked.
"It seems it would be better if I were on the wagon."
"You will still be close to the wagon, and in some ways better prepared to protect the Shalane. A man on a horse has the advantage over one on foot, as you well know."
Jen nodded in deference.
"As you wish, Highness."
The rest of the preparations were finished in a chaotic rush, people running in all directions and shouting reminders and instructions to each other. A cadre of squires fitted Jen into the new armour Chatan had commissioned. The silver breastplate, arm and leg greaves and pauldrons were burnished to a high shine, each decorated with golden filigree. The breastplate bore the symbols of the lioness and the rose, devices of the First Mother and the Shalane. Black leather gloves, sword belt and scabbard completed the ensemble. Jen had ordered the armour fashioned as light as possible, wanting to retain the advantage of speed, and he pulled his brown hair behind him, securing it with a leather thong to keep it out of his eyes. The First Mother watched him approach and mount Crescent with a pleasantly speculative smile on her face. Jen tried to ignore it. Fenner returned just as the Shalane was about to despair of her arrival. Jen smiled at Fenner from atop Crescent, and she winked in return as she climbed inside the carriage. Jaren locked her and the Shalane in before climbing up to sit on a small platform fashioned on top of the wagon for the protectors. Jen nudged Crescent over by the First Mother as men opened the rear doors of the building, a large train of wagons pulling up from behind.
"What kind of protection has been arranged for Chatan?" Jen inquired of Mirel over the din.
"Nothing extraordinary. He will be surrounded by a detail of his soldiers, that is all.
It has always been felt that the Ha'ulric should not be hidden, as it would make him appear weak and fearful.
Who won the argument over which nation's soldiers will be in the vanguard?
We did, said Morel. Regent Ogbith is in command of the train. Our soldiers and our flag will march at the front. As a compromise, Shatan and his colours will be the vanguard on the return journey. Of course, at that point there will not be a separate kingdom called Rugoth. Speaking of Regent Ogbith, he told me of your idea for travelling to Eldaluri Mora. Do you really think this caravan is a bad idea?
I do, Jen opined. While the scouts have returned little notice of danger, a lumbering caravan is slow to move and easy to find. I recognise that the people need ceremony, but what wisdom I have tells me a small group should have left in the middle of the night 2 weeks ago and let the caravan follow as bait.
And what did Harrick say to that?
That I was too young to know anything about such matters.
Did you tell Maywen of your plan?
No.
She suggested much the same. It worries me that you both agree on this point.
The First Mother frowned pensively until the building's front doors swung open. The driver of the Shalane's wagons, a weathered horse master named Ulni, urged the horses forward, and the wagon emerged into the sunlight. It took nearly half an hour to get the caravan situated in the castle courtyard. Rugothian horse soldiers, 250 strong, led the procession, though Shertan's smaller company of soldiers came directly after, in front of the Shalane. The full complement of Ogmerian soldiers brought up the rear after the supply wagons, a formidably equipped horse regiment dressed in red with burnished bronze breastplates.
Lord Blackshear?
Jen turned to see Mana at his stirrup. The plump cook flushed from exertion.
Mana, Jen grinned. It is good to see you. I've barely caught you, but I wanted to give you something before you left. I know the food they packed can wear on the tongue a bit, so I baked you this to give you a bit of sweetness when the meals get dull.
She handed him a loaf of sweet bread wrapped in a light cloth. It smelled delicious and was still warm from the oven.
The crust'll get hard, but the rest will keep if you don't leave it uncovered.
Thank you, Mana, Jen said.
You're most thoughtful and kind.
You're welcome, sir. All of us in the kitchen love you. Take good care of yourself and the Shalane and remember us when you come into your own at Blackshire. Some of us have always wanted to live in the country.
No, you don't, Mana, the First Mother said, leaning over. You will not escape my kitchens that easily. Jen deserves whatever we can give him, to be sure, but he will not have my cook.
Mana curtsied. As you wish, your grace.
Farewell, Mana, said Jen.
Mana waved and walked away toward the castle.
You will be sharing that, of course, Morel said. It smells lovely.
Jen placed the bread in a saddlebag.
Share what, your grace?
Don't toy with me, Lord Blackshire. If you don't share, I will let it drop within Padre Athan's hearing that you taught my daughter to cheat at cards.
She needs a bit more practice, by the way.
At last the castle gates swung open. An enormous crowd of onlookers, barely checked by guards, thronged about the caravan clapping and shouting as Regent Ogbith led the long line of soldiers out. Jen shook his head at the folly of driving the Shalane through a mob of people. Settling himself, he concentrated on sharpening his senses, taking in everything around him. Only when he passed through the castle gates did he realize the enormity of the danger. More people than he had ever seen in his life crammed the streets and buildings to overflowing. Swarms of celebrants milled about the alleys, windows and rooftops, all festive and carefree. The noise rose and fell in waves. Festive bunting hung from rooftops and windows, and performers were everywhere, singing, juggling and blowing fire. Merchants sold every kind of trinket imaginable, from moon medallions and wooden shakers filled with pebbles to kites, beaded bracelets, and carved replicas of the luminary personalities of the caravan. Little boys held up small wooden gens as he rode by, many sporting wooden swords at their sides. As Shertan and the Shalane passed, great shouts of adoration rose. But Jen was surprised when he found his name chanted in company with Long Live the First Mother. Young ladies from every walk of life waved sashes at him, leaning forward so that he might grab them if he would. Jen ignored them, keeping his eyes forward. Morel leaned close.
You see that there is plenty of womanhood left for you, she yelled. You might want to wave or salute. The ebullient crowd swirled about them, but Jen didn't dare let himself get distracted. His head roved everywhere. He hoped the Shalane had enough sense to stay away from the windows of the wagon. As it was, the guards could not keep the onlookers from crowding the road, and the people seemed to take it as an honour to touch the wagon as it rumbled by. The mob forced them to stop several times to wait as soldiers roughly cleared the way. Once they turned and left the city centre, Jen hoped the situation would improve. Instead, he found the broad road leading east just as thick with people. As they crept slowly forward along the lane, Jen felt increasingly uneasy. The buildings here were lower and the crowd more rural. He caught sight of more than one bow among the crowd, along with the occasional spear and club. Beer and ale flowed freely from taverns lining the way, and drunken revellers reeled about, yelling in slurred voices. A commotion in the street brought the caravan to a halt.
"It will take us the better part of the day just to leave Mickmir at this rate," Cadean shouted from where he rode just behind Mirel. "The mob grows more unruly."
As the First Mother turned to address her protector, Jen caught movement on the rooftop on her side of the street. Someone fell from the roof of a nearby house, hitting the ground with a thud. A similar sound on the opposite side of the street let him know that someone else had fallen. People screamed, and Jen snapped his eyes up to the roof. A man drew his bow and fired from the position vacated by the victim of his shove. Grabbing the First Mother's shoulder, Jen pushed her backward. She flailed, and the arrow passed inches in front of her face before sinking into Crescent's flanks. Jen knew another arrow was coming from the opposite direction, but could do nothing as Crescent reared in pain. Jen heard the second arrow impact the horse's shoulder, and he threw himself from the saddle before the floundering horse could fall and crush him. His head hit the stones and his vision blurred for a moment. The people shied away as he threw off his disorientation and jumped to his feet. Drawing his sword, he scanned the rooftops. The men had vanished.
"Jen!"
Cadean yelled to him as he helped a pale Mirel from the saddle and toward the wagon.
"Unlock it!"
Jen sprinted to the wagon as the rest of the dark guard rode forward and surrounded them, swords at the ready, eyes darting about. Mirel was visibly shaken. Cadean practically threw her inside the wagon with her daughter, pulling himself in after and closing the door. Jen ran back to Crescent, finding him dead, two arrows protruding from his flesh. Poisoned, Jen reasoned. Working quickly, he pulled the shafts from the horse for evidence. By the time he had finished, Regent Ogbeth, Ethris, and a large contingent of soldiers had pushed the people roughly away from the scene, curses filling the air from both sides of the altercation.
"What happened, Jen?" the regent asked.
As Jen told the story, Jeff came forward and dismounted. In moments he pulled his book, quill, and ink bottle from his leather bag and began writing, balancing the ink bottle on the opposite page as he wrote. Harrick ordered that a message be sent back to his son, the acting warden of Mickmir, and that the two arrows be taken as well as descriptions of the men. Before the messenger could leave, Maywen arrived, bow in her hand, and asked to inspect the arrows.
"Do you think the other arrow was meant for you or the First Mother?"
Regent Ogbeth asked.
"It is difficult to tell," Jen replied, "though I would wager it was for me. From the angle, it would have either hit me in the head or the First Mother in the side or leg. You may wish to inspect the horse. The arrows appear unremarkable, but any poison that can kill a horse that quickly would be rare. It was likely silverberry, dead thorn, or elver weed. None of them are easy to make. Was anyone else targeted?"
"I have not heard from the Ogmerians," reported Regent Ogbeth, "but no one else from Rugoth. Have you heard anything, Maywen?"
"No."
"Very well," said the regent. "We need to get out of the city as quickly as we can. Let me have a few words with the First Mother. Jaren?"
As Regent Ogbeth spoke to Mirel through the bars, Maywen probed the horse's wounds. Jen watched her, wondering what Samian would think.
"Dead thorn," she said in Elvish. "The wound turns black, then?"
Jen asked in her language.
"You know your poisons as well as your Elvish," she said, standing and regarding him gravely. "Yes, the wound turns black. It still could be something else or a combination of things. This whole caravan idea is folly," she said, fuming as she stalked back toward the head of the caravan.
Retrieving Mana's gift from the saddlebags and thanking Eldaloth that the horse hadn't fallen the other way, Jen waited until Regent Ogbeth was finished before climbing up to join Jaren. Mirel was assuring her daughter that everything would be fine.
"A quick piece of work there, Jen,"
Jaren said as the caravan began moving again. Cadean owes you a debt. If the First Mother were hurt or killed on his watch, I don't think he would forgive himself. At this rate, you will be a rich man when the time comes to call in favours. The caravan moved much more quickly afterward, the soldiers guarding the route, brooking no interruptions or worshipful surges toward the Haulric or the Shalane. The Dark Guard remained in formation around the wagon, Captain Tolbrook unapologetically ordering them to attack anyone who got close. At length, and to everyone's relief, they passed out of the city and into the countryside. Their caravan was followed by another of equal or greater numbers. Provision wagons stretched back as far as his eye could see, and as they passed by less populated roads, others fell into the line, having assembled beforehand, prepared to follow the Haulric and the Shalane to Elder Lurie Mora.
"Regent Ogbeth won't like this," Jen said. "We can't protect all these people."
"He won't protect them," Jaren said. "He knew this would happen, and had an announcement taken to the merchants and outfitting companies within the city. I doubt most of them have any idea what the road will be like. I don't like the mercenary rabble they bring either. Anyone could be in that caravan. After the assassination attempt, Regent Ogbeth may order the portal to Shroud Lake closed to everyone but those in this caravan." As the numbers of people on the side of the road dwindled and civilization gave way to open plain, Jen relaxed. The day was cloudless, bright and warm. A stiff but soothing breeze blew in the smell of grasses and wildflowers, dissipating the dust from the passing of the horses. Sometime before the sun fell, they would arrive at the Pearl Bridge that spanned two large shard sections. They would camp before crossing. The journey to the Shroud Lake portal in Three Willow would take a week.
"You had best get your rest," Jaren said. "You will need to be sharp tonight. There's no telling what kind of people are tagging along in those wagons behind us. You might want to get your forehead looked at."
Jen brought his hand up, tenderly probing the scabby, shallow cut. He hardly felt like sleeping, but saw the wisdom in it. He hopped down from the perch atop the wagon and went toward the covered wagon that had been prepared especially for him and Jaren.
"Good work, Jen,"
Tolbrook praised his former apprentice as he passed. Jen saluted him and waved to Volney and Gerund before catching the side of the wagon and swinging himself inside. The accommodations were simple, several blankets and one chest each for him and Jaren. During a brief halt, Jen summoned a squire to help him with his armour. Once the young man finished, Jen dismissed him and spread some blankets before opening his chest to place the bread inside. To his surprise, he found a note from Ethris, along with several texts of ancient appearance. "More reading for you," the note said simply. Jen thumbed through the books briefly, excited to read more about Triss magic. He had found the books Ethris had loaned him over the winter fascinating and a little frightening. Triss magic was unlike the Dwam magic and Min magic that Ethris practiced, and all the stories of Mikik's horrors during the Mikikian Wars became vividly true. Many reminded him of the dreams and visions that had tortured him when he had worn the training stones. If the power of creation revealed the soul of the caster, as one book said, then Mikik's was truly black. Walking fire, amalgamated corpses crafted into monstrosities of flesh, diseased mosquitoes, poisoned waters, every horror imaginable and unimaginable came to life in the pages of the books. The most horrifying were the tales of men and women slain in battle and then reanimated again to return and slaughter their unsuspecting loved ones. Jen shut and locked the chest, closing his eyes and settling in on the blankets. He wondered what kinds of things Shatan would do with the power, or, more importantly, whom he would do them to. The early Triss magicians among the humans found themselves worshipped and revered by the people, for the Triss magicians were the only ones who could stand against Mikik's most malicious creations. Despite their importance to the battle, or perhaps because of it, pride infected the ranks of Triss magicians, inciting division and destruction. Only when the plight of Kihol turned its most miserable did they set aside their self-importance to unite around a shared desperation. Sleep finally claimed him as the caravan lumbered forward. Jen awoke an hour before sundown, finding Mirel sitting with her legs dangling over the back of the wagon. Her hair was loose about her shoulders, but there was tension in the stiffness of her posture and the tilt of her head. Cadean rode a short distance behind, countenance upset.
Jen straightened his clothing and came to sit by the First Mother.
"How may I serve you, Miral?" Jen asked.
"Saving my life was plenty for today, thank you. Or have you done so much now that you don't expect anyone to notice or care about further acts of courage?"
"There's an adage among bards that says, 'Play the same song thrice, and none will listen but the mice.' But you certainly haven't come here to lavish me with gratitude."
"Haven't I?" said Miral.
"No," he said. "The expression on your face seems more indicative of an impending rant."
"Would you prefer the gratitude first?"
"The rant will be much more interesting, I'm sure."
"Very well," Miral said. "Seeing that I am predictable, I will begin. Have you puzzled out the mystery of our would-be assassins? Do you know who ordered the attack?"
"Well, it seems that," he began.
"I'll tell you who it was, Jen. It was that idiot of a future son-in-law that ordered it. Of course, I have expected something of the sort to happen for some time, since you are certainly not his friend, whatever he may be pretending now, and I have put forth no effort at all to hide my displeasure for him or my preference for you. But the sheer stupidity of it, already the tale of the ilk's attack spreads through the caravan. The ilk! So people are expected to believe that the Haulrik rode exposed through a busy street, but instead of attacking him or the Shalane, the ilk decides to unleash his assassins on two people completely irrelevant to the prophecy. If Shertan had even a diseased shred of intelligence, he would have at least paid an assassin to kill someone near him, so it would appear as if he were a target as well. As it is, he might as well have stood up on his horse and yelled, 'Heap all suspicion on me!' I half wish the ilk would show up and take a chunk out of Shertan. Eldaloth knows he has some chunks to spare, and a fright would do him good. How dare he try to kill me on the streets of my own city?"
"Miral," Jen said, keeping his voice soothing, "you cannot with certainty lay this to his charge. The day I defied Shertan for the Shalane, I made many enemies, even in Rugoth. When you named me the Shalane's protector, you made some of your own. While most Rugothians now fall on our side of those events, most Ogmerians do not. This is the first time in months either one of us has travelled away from secure places, the first chance that assassins had to reach us."
"Perhaps," Miral replied. "But I feel the answer in my heart, and it angers me. I haven't been this upset in some time."
"First time to face your own mortality, then?" Jen asked.
"Yes. I'm not quite so practiced as you.
And I hope you never are. But I have something that might help." Jen reached back and pulled the sweetbread from the chest. "Do you like the heel?"
"No," she answered.
Jen took his knife from his boot, cutting the heel for himself and slicing a generous piece for the First Mother. The bread was still warm and moist. He handed her the slice. "See if that doesn't taste better than you remember. Once you get over the initial shock of almost losing your life, I think you will find you have a keener appreciation for simple things. Spring would only be half as beautiful if winter weren't before, as they say." The First Mother ate in silence as the sun, light diffuse in the dust of the wagons behind, sank into the faint outline of the city Mikmir. While her muscles relaxed, the anger around her eyes did not fade, and Jen feared what she might be planning, and he hoped the plan wasn't rash. Determination in the hands of the powerful, intelligent, and vengeful created disaster as often as not, and the First Mother wasn't the type to give up when her mind was set to a purpose.
"Your watch approaches," Miral said, licking the crumbs and sugar from her fingers, "so I had best get on to the gratitude."
"There is no need, Your Grace."
"I meant for the bread."
"Oh, of course. You're welcome.
As for the other matter, there must be some reward. You can't save an aristocrat's life and get nothing. Honor requires something be done. You have already given me rank and land beyond what I could ever expect. No more is needed or required. It is my pleasure to help you however I can." "Well," she continued, taking his hand and kissing it, "it is by your hand that my house has its honor and its health. It will be my pleasure to reward you when I decide on something suitable. Do come talk to me when time permits. I will not be so busy on this long trip and could use someone to talk to."
The caravan slowed and turned off the road before the sun fully sank. The wagons circled, forming a protective ring with a host of soldiers surrounding the outside. Once stopped, the caravan exploded into activity. Horses were unhitched, watered and fed, and servants unloaded tents and cooking equipment.
An angry Regent Ogbith wandered around, barking orders.
"You should sleep in the wagon with your daughter, Your Grace," Jen suggested. "For all we know, the assassins might be in the caravan behind us."
"Cadet already requested I do the same." "I will not cower. Do I have any crumbs on my lips?"
"No."
"You didn't look," Mirel said.
"Yes, I did, if you say so.
Have my daughter heal that wound. I will come and clean the blood off your face momentarily."
"A servant can do that."
"Then I will be your servant. Cadet, see to the tent. Make sure we are next to Aethrys. Help me down, Jen."
When Jen arrived at the Shalane's wagon, Jeff was there helping Fenner out of it. Jaren locked the door behind her.
"How are our accommodations, Jen?" Jaren asked.
"Plain and functional, just like us," Jen quipped.
Jaren slapped him on the back on the way by.
"Excellent."
"Jen,"
Fenner exclaimed, embracing him,
"is it true? One of the arrows was meant for you? How awful. Who would do such a thing?"
"We may never know, Fenner."
"Saving the First Mother," Jeff said, extending his hand. Jen shook it.
"Yet another item on a long list of brave deeds. At this rate, I will need to compose 2 or 3 songs to proclaim them all. Perhaps I shall divide them pre- and post-betrothal. The betrothal, or rather the failed one, will be a song by itself.
Did the First Mother visit you to offer her thanks?"
"Yes." "Oh, I must have every word."
In an instant, his book and quill appeared.
"Did she cry from gratitude, or perhaps sob from the awful memory? A hug or royal kiss? Promises of wealth?"
"You don't know the First Mother very well," Jen answered.
"Oh, come now, don't be so close-mouthed. It should be recorded for history."
"It was a private conversation. Suffice it to say that she thanked me, and we shared a bit of sweetbread."
"You have sweetbread?"
Fenner asked.
"From whom?"
"Marna," Jen answered.
"Who is Marna?"
Jeff inquired, scribbling quickly. "Is she the beautiful daughter of a duke or regent giving you a token to remember her sweet embrace by?"
"Well, no, Jeff," Jen grated, starting to feel irritated. "She is the rather plump cook of the castle. She has 5 children and a husband who love her dearly. I really must be about my duty."
"Come, Jeff," Fenner said, taking the bard's arm and steering him away. "I will tell you about how Jen first met Marna. Quite funny, actually. I will see you soon, Jen."
Fenner waved as she led Jeff away. Jen thanked her silently, breathing out and standing at attention in front of the wagon door. The day was finally starting to cool, and the settling of the dust was of itself a reason to rejoice.
"Hello, Jen,"
came the Shalane's quiet greeting from behind the wagon's bars.
"Good evening, Shalane. Are you well?"
"Because of you I am," the Shalane said. "I could not bear to lose my mother, and I owe you a great debt. I have always known the danger is real, but never really felt it. I hope I can manage all this worry."
"You will do well."
"I'm not like you or my mother. I'm not strong in the way you two are."
"You have never had to be," Jen said, "and I hope you will never have to be."
Silence passed between them for many minutes as the activity of the caravan continued noisily around them.
"I do have a question, Jen."
"Yes, Holiness."
"Where is the sweetbread?"
the Shalane asked.
"I don't know what you're talking about."
"Oh, you are a liar now.
A shame to tarnish your reputation so soon after polishing it up, don't you think?
You're lucky I'm trapped in this wagon. You bring me a piece of Marna's sweetbread tomorrow, or we will have words."
"Yes, Holiness. Provided there is any left. Jaren may smell it and devour the whole loaf before sunup. He has quite the appetite."
Jen realized the bread would not last long and resolved to eat a large chunk of it as soon as possible.
"He will be severely punished if that is the case," the Shalane said. "So what did my mother say to you?"
"Just the standard things aristocrats and nobles say when someone saves their lives. Nothing out of the ordinary."
"Humor me."
"She said thank you." I answered, "There is no need." She said, "Yes, there is." I said, "No, there isn't." She said, "There is too." I said, "I assure you there isn't." Then she said,
her hands were on the bars now.
"Will you stop it? Did she give you some reward?"
"Well, she said I must reward you." I said, "There is no need." She said, "Yes, there is." I said,
"Can't you just give a straight answer, Jen? In the name of Eldaloth and the vow you took to obey and serve me, I command you to give me a straight answer."
"Answers, like roads, are the most fun when crooked."
But just like travellers, listeners get frustrated when the journey takes too long, the Shalane sighed. You are a private person, aren't you? Did she flirt with you again?
Not really.
So, a little then?
Jen chuckled.
Hard to say. Flirting is at its most successful when the recipient can neither confirm nor deny it. Confirm or deny it? If the barmaid's sister doesn't work out to your satisfaction, you always have me. And that look! Not hard to confirm that now, is it?
Don't confuse flirting with jesting, Holiness.
Don't be coy, the Shalane said. I know my mother. I have never seen her act the way she does when she's around you. She's up to something. She's never been so relaxed around any other man.
Is it so hard, Jen said, to believe I could make a woman feel relaxed?
Yes.
Why? I have ample evidence to the contrary. Fenner, Mirelle, Marna, streets full of crazed, ravenous young women. Maybe it's just you.
We're not talking about me. We're talking about you.
Actually, we were talking about your mother.
Don't worry, Mirelle doesn't often get the opportunity for levity or idle conversation.
I sense the burden of leadership leads to a great deal of loneliness, and I provide her with a bit of entertainment from time to time. That is all. Though if she were seriously flirting with me, I could certainly do worse.
I will have to tell Fenner that.
Jen winced. Please don't.
And speaking of our mutual friend, the Shalane said, have we moved beyond friendship yet?
You and I, or you and Fenner?
Her grip on the bars tightened, blood draining from her fingers. So help me, Jen.
All right, all right. I would say yes, but we have agreed not to pursue things too aggressively while your marriage and the birth of God stand before us. We will both be busy and in more than a little danger. It is best not to get too attached in such times.
That's what she said, the Shalane said, though it is terribly wrong-headed.
So why did you ask me?
To see if you would say the same thing as she did. You must be the one who came up with the idea.
Jen was about to counter when he noticed Shatan approaching.
Oh, blessed day. Here comes your fiancé.
Shatan, obviously saddle-sore, waddled awkwardly toward the wagon. The sun had burned his face a deep red, and dirt covered the white outfit he had worn for the ceremonious parade out of Mikmir. A contingent of his guard, Captain Drockley in command, encircled him.
"Let me see her,"
Shatan growled, exasperated.
"Yes, my lord," Jen said cheerily, unlocking the door for him.
Drockley and another guard moved to help, as Shatan's girth prevented him from taking the high step up easily. Jen followed him inside and shut the door.
"What are you doing in here?"
Shatan barked.
"We're to be married, for pity's sake. Give us a little privacy."
"No unbranded man is to be allowed alone with the Shalane. We could arrange for Ethris to—"
"It's all right, Jen," the Shalane said. "He and I should talk."
"Very well. I will be outside."
Jen jumped down, drawing his sword at the same time. Most of Shatan's guards stumbled backward in surprise, two actually falling over themselves. To his credit, Drockley didn't move, but instead carefully examined the exposed blade. Jen held it at the ready.
"Forgive me," Jen apologized. "I must be poised for action with so many armed men around the wagon."
The conversation within was shorter than Jen expected, almost brief enough to be considered instantaneous. Shatan rapped on the door to be let out and left as quickly as his soreness would permit.
"So what was that about?"
Jen asked after Shatan left earshot.
"Brace yourself," the Shalane answered from behind the bars. "He came to express his concern and give comfort about the recent attempt on my mother's life."
"I'm stunned. Kaimas is doing a capital job."
The Shalane laughed.
"For the record, Jen, that was very cynical. Maybe Kaimas would offer you some lessons on social etiquette too, since you still treat your saviour like an incompetent stable boy. He's the Ulrich, Jen."
"I know. But I see his gut and I just forget."
"That's my future husband you're talking about," the Shalane said, stifling her laughter as best she could.
"I'm sorry," Jen apologised. "I, of course, wish you every happiness."
"Thank you. As for his gut, I am counting on the meagre fare of our journey to whittle it down to a more acceptable size. Once its rotundity is no longer blinding your vision, perhaps then you will remember your manners."
"Maybe," Jen replied non-committally.
Mirelle approached, carrying a small basin of water and a towel draped over her arm.
Cadean followed, asking her to let him carry the items. She refused, and the sight of the first mother of Rugoth in the attitude of a servant humbled Jen. She smiled sincerely at him as she came near and set the basin on a ledge at the rear of the wagon. The odd sight drew the attention of those nearby. "Sit down, please," she said. Jen complied, sitting on the ledge of the wagon. "I see you haven't asked my daughter to heal you. Shalane, can you reach Jen and heal him?"
"I did not know he was hurt," Shalane exclaimed, pulling open a slot in the door that allowed meals and other items to be passed to her. "Why didn't you say anything, Jen?"
"That is a trifle," he replied. After an exasperated sigh, the Shalane reached through the slot and touched his arm, and a few moments later, the wound had healed completely, leaving only dried blood and dust on the side of Jen's face. Mirel dipped the towel in the water and washed his face, his arms and his hands tenderly. When done, she kissed him.
"Thank you again," Mirel said.
"Thank you, Mirel." For several moments, she locked her eyes on his, Jen ignoring the interested expressions all around them and trying to see what he could find in the woman before him.
"I would like to talk with my daughter," she finally said.
"Certainly, Your Grace." Jen unlocked the door and helped her in, closing it behind her. Cadean stood at his side and Jen resumed his stance, thoughts of the first mother running confused through his mind.
"Look, Jen, I..."
Cadean started, his voice quiet and subdued.
"Cadean," Jen interrupted, "please, there is no need to say anything. I tire of people being in my debt. I care for the first mother as much as you care for the Shalane. We are brothers in our devotion to them. We watch out for each other and for each other's charges. I was in the right place to help today, and I did my duty as you would have done in my place." "I thank you all the same," Cadean said. "I have not honored you with the trust you are due. You have more than earned it, but I am stubborn. I have watched over her for nearly 20 years, and I have made mistakes. If she were hurt because I was not ready or able, or because I was forgetful or not alert, I would take my own life, I swear it." "No one doubts your devotion or your ability, Cadean. Your careful service does you credit," Jen answered.
Cadean seemed to want to tell him something, but he decided against it, and they passed the time in silence. Nearly an hour went by before servants brought meals for the first mother and first daughter. Mother and daughter talked in low voices, and Jen did not try to pry into their conversation. Peeking around the wagon, he glimpsed the Pearl Bridge for the first time. His eyes required several seconds to take in the structure. The bridge defied comfort or comprehension, spanning an impossible distance between two shard fragments. Its length and the yawning gap between the shards gave it a fragile feeling, and Jen could understand why some people in Rugoth dared not to cross some of the longer bridges. Pearl Bridge emanated vertigo, even at a distance. The first mother stayed with her daughter for her meal, and as she descended from the wagon when finished, she handed the empty plates and mugs to Cadean. "Take care of these," she ordered. "I need to speak with Jen briefly."
"Yes, Your Grace,"
Cadean said, retrieving the items without complaint. The first mother waited until he was out of sight before turning back to Jen and, embracing him again, whispered in his ear.
"Keep talking to my daughter. You lighten her spirit, and she will need more of that every step we get closer to Elder Lurimora. She tries to be brave, but she is frightened."
"I will," Jen said, as Mirel pulled away and straightened his hair with her fingers. Her nearness was exhilarating.
"I think the wind will win that battle, Mirel," he said. "Perhaps I should wear a hat like Jeff, though I doubt I would find more than a crow's feather out here to garnish it with."
"No," Mirel said, "a crown for that head or nothing. Good night.
Talk to me soon. There are several measures I want put in place for my daughter's safety."
"As you wish, Your Grace." Cadean arrived and the first mother left for her tents. Night descended on the camp. Regent Ogbith, motivated by the attack earlier that day, ordered double the active patrols they had planned for their journey. Jen caught Shadan Cairn wandering about, face reflecting a childlike glee, though Jen had to believe he was disappointed about not getting to kill anyone that afternoon.
"So, Shalane," Jen said, "what did your mother say to you?"
He waited, hearing the Shalane walk to the front of the wagon before sitting by the slot.
"Just the standard things mothers say to comfort their daughters," the Shalane replied.
Jen smiled.
"Humor me,"